Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It works. The Productivity Commission began this research project into urban water reform about 18 months ago amidst tight water restrictions, proposals for very expensive and very controversial new infrastructure, desal plants, stormwater harvesting, treatment plants, through to household rainwater tanks, etc. We'd recently finished some major research pieces on rural water and had frequently heard the comment, "Oh, thank God the urban water systems aren't in such a mess." Interesting. Rural water markets exist to allocate irrigation water to those who value it most, but there's no such thing in urban water supply. No doubt it seems a bit unfair to spend 15 seconds of this talk talking about the good news, what the urban water supply systems currently do very well, and spend the rest of my 15 minutes talking about the bad news or the issues of concern, but that's what I'm going to do because we all know and should be cognizant of the strengths of the current urban water supply systems as they exist particularly in most of the major metropolitan areas. But the more interesting thing is to talk about how they might be improved. Where we are today, the symptoms that caught our eye was the resort to restrictions. And I use that rather than rationing because the water restrictions don't actually limit the quantity of water, they just selectively make it much more inconvenient to use urban water by specifying how, when, and for what purpose water can be used, and achieve demand reductions through inconvenience, which is interesting to economists because it doesn't seem to occur anywhere else. The other interesting point that triggered our attention was the announcement of these very expensive government investments in supply augmentation. The way the system works at the moment is, as you all know, the bulk water harvesting, treatment, distribution, retail, wastewater removal is the province of government utilities. It's typically centralised, integrated both physically and financially. But when water is scarce, that scarcity isn't reflected in pricing, as occurs in virtually all other goods and services. We use these restrictions on use instead, or convenience of use. The other thing that we found fascinating to start with is the way urban and rural water across Australia have been treated as functionally separate, impeding the movement of water from low value to high value uses. And yet we wouldn't do this for any other valuable resource, labour or capital or anything else. In the absence of a market for bulk water, supply augmentation decisions tend to be made with very limited information. There had been virtually no major urban water augmentation for the last two decades. So our diagnosis of the current situation is that the conventional urban water supply systems place very little value on the water being collected and distributed. There are only charges for the collection, treatment, transport costs. But as a result of that, it's difficult to use the price signals to get consumers to change their consumption levels and behaviours and patterns, and B, to accurately assess which supply augmentation projects should generate the greatest net social benefits, in which order they should be brought online, and when. I'd like to emphasise that what we're talking about is not just about short-term problems brought on by a lack of rainfall. We're not doing this in a crisis. We would argue that all the sorts of reforms that we're discussing would still be worth considering if the dams were three-quarters full rather than three-quarters empty. And I'd just like to reinforce Ken's comment about policy bans and the converse, I guess, of the grand announcement of a potential future white elephant, perhaps. So, in his opening comments this morning, our chairman Ian mentioned the choices of sources of water and technology for water for supply augmentation. And like many others, we started off by scratching our heads about how one might decide which new suppliers, which order, which sequence, when, where, etc. But asking those questions actually led us to a quite different area of concern, perhaps a higher order question. We're by no means the first or the only group of economists to look at urban water supply systems, make the same basic observations, and then explore the logical consequences. We've tried to be very systematic and rigorous and put all the options on the table, rather than starting from advocating one particular technology and working backwards. We asked what would be the desirable set of attributes of an urban water supply system. What should the system do in terms of quality, safety, reliability, price, equity of supply, and so on? And then we started to, in effect, brainstorm, are there ways to tweak the current public utility model for urban water supply in a way that would deliver those policy goals more than we have with the status quo? So that took us into the reform spectrum. The left-hand column, pricing, rural urban trade, structures and institutions, are the three areas that we focused on in our published report. It's interesting to note that these are basically the same three areas that were highlighted in 1992 in the COAG reform proposals, and they're still on the table. The next column gives the sort of attributes of the status quo, that pricing is focused on cost recovery, rural urban trade has this artificial separation, and the structure tends to be typically a vertically integrated public monopoly. And then we started to flesh out, in regard to those three areas of pricing, rural urban trade and structures, some possible areas of reform, with the easiest ones on the left and the ones which are certainly most difficult, most contentious, not necessarily desirable, let alone achievable, but there to simply be a bookend at that end of the spectrum. Improving block tariff structures, for example, is something that could be done relatively simply overnight without substantially changing the structures and the governance arrangements. So in each of those three areas, we've looked at a degree of simple, straightforward, through to so complicated you may not want to go there. The sequencing of reforms may be important too. It's not just a pick and choose from that smorgasbord. There are, of course, many others apart from the 10 we've got up there. Dealing with scarcity today, you can read the cartoon. And the possibility of scarcity-based pricing, where the price of the water itself varies inversely with the levels of the dams, is not a new idea, but it's one that doesn't seem to have been applied anywhere. So in terms of improving pricing opportunities, we find it very hard to understand how we expect to influence users' behaviour, to get them to act as if every drop of water is in fact precious, when in fact we're giving it away for almost nothing, just the cost of transporting it. So to rely on the quantitative restrictions and education suasive measures without using the price signal, one of the potentially most powerful tools in the policy armoury, seems like a significant handicap if you're actually trying to influence demand. So prices could actually vary depending on seasons from year to year. You could have a low-priced essential allocation that was to meet the equity considerations for those. There would need to be some changes in metering and billing People don't respond to a price signal if they only get it 3 months after the event. In the longer term, we saw no reason why prices would necessarily be higher. They would be variable. By reducing the likelihood of some poor investments, the possible white elephants, which I'll come back to later, you could actually lower the eventual cost to consumers because you've avoided those excessive investments. The role of the utility regulators is extremely important under the current regime. It seems to us that they have an extraordinarily difficult task, perhaps more so than it needs to be. The anomaly, it seems to us, is that regulators work with great precision on, you know, without wanting to be trivial, you know, sort of counting the small stuff very, very carefully, and then there can be a political announcement, oh, and by the way, we're going to spend a couple of bill on a diesel plant, and there's no need to look at that, fellas. It just seems to be a little bit inconsistent in that sense. With regard to rural urban water trading, we all know that agriculture takes 60-70% of the total water consumption across Australia. Households use about 10%. So relatively small diversions from rural use could make major and relatively low-cost contributions to urban water supply. There's a large number of potential ways that trade between rural and bi-directional trade between rural and urban water could be arranged if the institutional arrangements permitted it. We've gone into that in some detail in the book, but I won't cover it now. So, is it too much to imagine a competitive market, some retail competition, some competition in the bulk water supply market, where users were offered a variety of different price service security offerings? Is it conceivable that we could have a decentralised market? The first observation we make is that, as far as we know, such a market for urban water doesn't exist anywhere in the world, and I suspect there's probably a very good reason for that. But let's continue with the thought experiment anyway. On the left, again, we have the typical sort of linear integrated public monopoly model from the bulk water supplier through treatment, distribution, retailer, customer, wastewater. We are progressively moving towards things on the right, where you've got diverse sources, such as a diesel plant or a wastewater treatment plant, being supplied. But typically those are being done, in fact I think in all cases so far, by either the state government or the local government, the owner of the system. What we haven't seen yet is the possibility of an independent bulk water provider coming into that top row, that shaded area, XYZ Water Supply, who built their own diesel plant or treatment plant or stormwater harvesting or bought bulk water from Murray Goulburn Water or whatever, or tapped an aquifer that none of the rest of us knew about. Is it conceivable that instead of having multiple different sources with different cost structures all owned by the one utility, that we actually had competitive bulk water suppliers? The centralised natural monopoly parts of this process, a bit like electricity and gas, I guess, is the distribution system. As the natural monopoly that would have to be regulated, even if we went to a a much more diverse system with multiple bulk water suppliers and multiple retailers. The other impediment to something like this happening is that we would need to have we would need to be able to disaggregate the contestable elements of the supply chain. It's a prerequisite for getting some more competition and some more innovation into the whole urban water supply system. I'm just going to skip over that one. The potential payoffs from reform is that we might find competition for customers in price and quality, water suppliers competing for imports and seeking innovative ways of improving their price product offerings. The democratisation of water use, Ken mentioned earlier the fact that in many communities people don't actually know what the price reliability trade-off for that community is. There is enormous amounts of evidence that show the great diversity in people's willingness to pay for greater reliability, and yet at the moment everybody in a particular area gets exactly the same price reliability trade-off. If there were contestability in supply, we would envisage multiple different offerings, rather like has occurred with telecoms, electricity and gas and so on. Some of the offerings, I guess, are unimaginable ex ante, but bleed and obvious ex post. We'll have to wait and see. The direction of reform seems clear. The extent to which a market-oriented approach can be pursued does require a lot more analysis. We have not prepared a lay-down Mazaire blueprint for reform. There is no off-the-shelf solution. We know that water is not just another commodity. It has a whole lot of special attributes, particularly because of human health and ingestion. But there is scope, we believe, for making the urban water supply system work a bit better than it does at the moment. The challenge, I think, is to advance the reform agenda through a public review, looking at the costs and benefits of the options, and trying to understand the issues that would moderate altitudinal and political impasses to reform. One, for example, that always comes up is the concern of equity. What would be the effect on the poor of having variable prices for water that reflect scarcity? That turns out to be not an insurmountable question, but it's one that's very hard to get a public discussion of. So that's the challenge, we think. A national framework to guide reform already exists through the National Water Initiative. We think that's an excellent vehicle to reignite the momentum, build on earlier reforms. Thank you very much.